Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link, coming to you live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Onjiro.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe from the Social Media Desk.
Coming up, police in the Democratic Republic of Congo launched an assault on the residence of the leader of a separatist religious sect in Kinshasa, killing four people.
Yesterday, there was some exchange of fire in the neighborhood called Ngiringiri between the security forces and the people from Bunduja, Congo.
In Harare, experts hold emergency meeting to tackle the outbreak of armyworm caterpillars, causing damage to staple crops across several African countries.
Many countries are affected. The problem with these diseases is that if one country has it and if it is not controlled, it is going to affect the other countries.
And I'll be reading some of the comments you've been posting on our Facebook page, like the White House National Security Advisor Michael Flynn resignation, and of course comments coming from Cameroon.
But first, let's listen to what's happening around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. In the United States, President Trump's National Security Advisor Michael Flynn has resigned after revelations that he had discussed US sanctions on Russia with the Russian ambassador to the United States before Trump took office. It was also revealed that he misled Vice President Mike Pence about the conversations. It is illegal in the US for a private citizen, which Flynn was at the time, to engage in diplomacy with foreign officials. Flynn's resignation came hours after it was reported that the Justice Department had warned the White House weeks ago that Flynn could be vulnerable to blackmail on account of contacts with Russia. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said on Tuesday that European member countries and Canada had raised their defence spending by 3.8% last year.
It amounts to roughly $10 billion more for our defence. That makes a difference, but it's absolutely vital that we keep up the momentum.
Stoltenberg was speaking one day before the first meeting between the new US Defence Secretary, Jim Mattis, and his fellow NATO counterparts. President Trump stirred unease during his election campaign by suggesting he might not defend NATO allies who refuse to contribute their fair share. Doctors in Kenya's private healthcare system will strike from midnight in protest at a government clampdown on a stoppage at public hospitals. Jacqueline Kitulu, head of the Kenya Medical Association, said the private sector strike will run for an initial 48 hours and was in response to a court's decision to jail officials from public healthcare unions. Later on Tuesday, the Kenyan government called for the release of the jailed union officials in order that negotiations could continue. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The United Nations in Geneva says that soldiers in the Democratic Republic of Congo targeting the Kamwina Nzapu militia group killed at least 101 people between February the 9th and 13th. A UN rights spokeswoman said they fired indiscriminately with machine guns when they saw the militia fighters, who were mainly armed with machetes and spears. A senior figure in the European Parliament criticised the European Union on Tuesday, saying it needed profound reform. Guy Verhofstadt, a former Belgian Prime Minister, leads the group of the Alliance of Liberals and Democrats for Europe in the Assembly.
The Union doesn't deliver anymore. It's always too little, too late. And that is, in my opinion, the reason why many people and many citizens are angry in Europe.
Verhofstadt said Brexit, Trump and Putin were reasons enough for a profound reform of the EU. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
Welcome to Africa Link once again. I'm Eunice Onjiro.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe from the Social Media Desk.
We begin in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where police opened fire and tear gas at members of a separatist religious sect in Kinshasa, killing 4 people. The UN Human Rights Office is citing reports that at least 101 people have been killed in clashes between soldiers in Congo and a local militia in the last 4 days. Violence has surged across Congo in recent weeks after President Joseph Kabila refused to step down when his constitutional mandate expired in December. Zipporah Nyambura brings us more.
The UN Human Rights confirmed that among those killed were 39 women. Hundreds have died and thousands displaced in central Congo the last months in battles between security forces and the militia, who are seeking to avenge the death of their leader Kamuina Nsapu, who was killed by the Congolese armed forces last year. The killings are the latest palm of violence in the Central African country, racked by years of instability. However, the United Nations Organization Stabilization Mission in Congo military spokesperson Felix Baze says the numbers have been thrown out of proportion.
There were unconfirmed reports that 40 to 60 people lost their lives in the Kasai.
The situation was similar in Kinshasa after 4 members of a Congolese religious group were killed in clashes with security forces in the capital Kinshasa. As Baze further explains, the killings happened last evening after police invaded the home of Bundu Dia Congo BDK leader, self-proclaimed prophet Nemwanda Nsemi, and other 30 sect members.
There was some exchange of fire in the neighborhood called Ngiringiri between the security forces and the people from Bundu Dia Congo. And in the exchange of fire, 4 people were killed, 4 policemen were injured, and 6 weapons were recovered by the security forces.
Police Commissioner Didone Kabulo says the religious and political movement, BDK, is preparing to launch attacks in the capital. BDK's leader, Semi, is on the forefront in the fight to oust Congo's President Joseph Kabila. The sect leader has called on the Congolese to rise up against Kabila. As Baze further explains,
today, the police has cordoned the area and some negotiations are ongoing in order to have the leader of that group surrender.
The Congo was set to hold elections in November, but were postponed to an unspecified date, allowing Kabila to stay in power beyond the 2 terms allowed by the constitution. His refusal to step down has sparked widespread protests, mainly from the opposition BDK movement. The BDK, which seeks to revive the pre-colonial Congo kingdom, is mainly active in southwestern Congo's central province. Clashes between the sect and security forces claimed 14 lives in the west of the country. In 2008, the BDK staged an insurgency in which about 100 people were killed.
Zipporah Nyambura. Michael Flynn, U.S. President Donald Trump's national security advisor, has resigned from his post after it came to light that he discussed U.S. foreign policy with a Russian diplomat prior to Trump's inauguration, which is illegal under U.S. law. Zilia Fröhlich has more.
President Donald Trump's national security advisor, Michael Flynn, has resigned on Monday following reports he misled Vice President Mike Pence about contacts with a Russian diplomat, upending President Trump's foreign policy team less than a month into his presidency. A U.S. official told the Associated Press that Flynn was in frequent contact with Ambassador Sergei Kislyak on the day the Obama administration slapped sanctions on Russia for election-related hacking, as well as at other times during the transition. Flynn admitted that he held numerous calls with the Russian ambassador in his resignation letter. In it he stated, "Unfortunately, because of the fast pace of events, I inadvertently briefed the vice president-elect and others with incomplete information regarding my phone calls with the Russian ambassador. I have sincerely apologized to the president and the vice president, and they have accepted my apology. Conversations between citizens and foreign diplomats breach protocol and possibly violate the Logan Act, a law aimed at keeping citizens from conducting foreign diplomacy." Trump has named retired Army Lieutenant General Joseph Keith Kellogg as acting national security advisor.
Zilia Fröhlich.
And this is a report that, you know, has had many comments on our Facebook page. Victor Chan says he can't be resigning or forced to resign because of the Russian link. He has been forced to resign because he has contacts with some low-level Russian diplomats. His problem stemmed from that. He didn't tell Trump prior to his inauguration that he had Russian contacts. Andy Muhammad Jafal says, I hope this move will also change U.S. tendency to war with Iran, which was strongly advocated by Flynn. And Issa Zahardin wrote on our Facebook page and said, to me, the most interesting thing is how this will serve a lesson to many Africans, especially the leaders, that consider leadership as a means of extorting wealth, but not to serve.
Thank you for your comments. International experts held emergency talks in Harare today to tackle an outbreak of crop-eating armyworm caterpillars advancing across several African countries. The armyworm has already caused damage to staple crops in Zambia, Zimbabwe, South Africa and Ghana, with reports also suggesting Malawi, Mozambique and Namibia are affected. David Fury, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization coordinator for Southern Africa, has been telling DW just how serious the problem is.
The situation is bad in the sense that many countries are affected. The problem with these diseases is that if one country has it and if it is not controlled, it is going to affect the other countries that may not even know that country A had this disease.
David Piri of Food and Agriculture Organization. I spoke to DW's Columbus Mavunga in Harare and wanted to find out whether the experts had been able to come up with immediate remedies.
They say armyworm, when it was discovered in the Americas in 1957, up to now they have not managed to eliminate it. So that will be the same story for Southern Africa. They are saying it's here to stay. They can only look for strategies in the next 3 days to look at how that can be contained with the region as a whole instead of one country doing it on its own.
So this particular armyworm is not known in Africa, like you said, you know, being discovered in the Americas. But has there been any explanation as to how it reached the continent?
The suspicion is that, the continent was hit by an El Nino-induced drought in the 2015-2016 region. So some countries, including Zimbabwe, imported maize from Brazil and other Latin American countries. So they think that is how the four armyworm came to the region.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare.
Now, Eunice, for our social radio now, let's go to Cameroon for a short while. We got a video from an activist saying both Francophones and Anglophones can no longer live together in harmony because Anglophones have been marginalized for years. In the video, he says that the current leadership of President Paul Biya has shown no political will to solve the ongoing crisis in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon.
So what have been the reactions to that?
Njome says it is quite impossible for them to live together. The Anglophones are grossly marginalized. He says there's no drinking water, no good roads, no electricity in Anglophone regions. Kamel Mandela Njoku says the issue isn't against our Francophone brothers and sisters, it's against the government. The Francophone government has been in power since 1960 and they dictate everything. French is being used to teach in schools, courts, and Anglophones are second-class citizens. Paul Ulich says the French system of government is outdated, corrupt, and promotes autocracy. Southern Cameroon provides and supports La République du Cameroun without any benefit from the latter.
So, Isaac, is there anyone with a different and balanced opinion?
Of course, I found some. Leslie Saba says, Francophones and Anglophones in Cameroon have lived harmoniously, as is evident, on the streets, markets, churches, and so many social institutions. And then Max Azongo says, both Francophones and Anglophones can live together. The problem here is the lack of concern by French Cameroon concerning the issue of segregation of their fellow countrymen. And Shea Gideon says, actually, both French and English-speaking Cameroonians have been and can live together. The main issue is how the political class, predominantly French-speaking, views and treats the Anglophone regions. There has been a very calculated move over the years to assimilate and eliminate the culture and inheritance of the English-speaking Cameroonians. Keep on these comments coming on our Facebook page, and we'll read them whenever we can. Over to you, Eunice.
Yes, thank you again, Isaac, and thank you to our listeners. Make sure you continue with the conversations. You're listening to Africa Link. You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Eunice Onjiro with my co-host
Isaac Mugabe from the social media desk.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we meet a DJ from Uganda.
Initially, when you're learning how to DJ, you know, you want to push yourself, see what you can do. Can you make people dance? Can you mix hip-hop maybe with dancehall or maybe house or something?
And I'll be reading some of your comments because it is Valentine's Day. Should you go for a card or send a message, WhatsApp message, or use another social media platform tool?
Now, the population of the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions of Cameroon are celebrating Nji Collins Gba, a 17-year-old Google coding winner. Gba braved the internet blackout imposed by Cameroon's government to stop social media from passing what they called anti-government propaganda, and he travelled to Yaoundé to apply for the global award. DW's Moki Kinzeka travelled to Bamenda and met Gba's family.
Until recently, G. Patrick was an ordinary teller in Bayele, a neighborhood in Cameroon's northwestern town of Bamenda. All this changed when his son G. Collins Gba became the first African teenager to win the Google annual coding competition. He is now the talk of the village. He told me how it all started.
He used to take my computer and I was not very happy with it because I was feeling that he is just spending time without doing house chores.
After registering for the competition in November 2016, Collins, who comes from English-speaking Cameroon, faced his first challenge. His school was closed due to protests against what they called marginalization by government, as he was still to cope with staying at home when he was supposed to be in class. The government of Cameroon imposed an internet blackout to stop anti-state propaganda. Amid financial hardships, Collins traveled some 30 kilometers to Bouda, a French-speaking town, in order to access internet connection to be able to complete his application.
They told us to know some basic things in computer science and some basics in programming. In computer science programming and how to use certain software like GitHub. So you basically just need to create an account and use your Google account if you don't have one yet, or if you use your Google account if you have one yet, or you create a new account which we would use to participate in the competition.
As for the father, Collins' win is an inspiration for many.
I was very, very surprised. I blamed myself for being so hard on him, but now I am very happy.
Among Collins' admirers who have come visiting is journalist Ate Francis.
This young man had that inspiration to go to BAFSA, but you don't know how many of them are there who could have been on the podium, but who do not have the chance. Just like those businesses that are being crumbled in this sector of the country because of the absence of internet. And it's a big shame because I don't know how I can live for a day without internet.
So what are Collins' aspirations?
I would like to study computer science. Yeah, in the university. You get tempted sometimes, but the main thing is to focus on what exactly you want to do, want to have a goal, and you see that you're going to get benefits at the end, or you're going to learn something new from it, then you should totally go with it.
Moki Kinzeka filed that report.
And Eunice, as you've just heard in that report, Eunice, Collins' story is really inspiring many Cameroonians, and although they are happy in the English-speaking regions, men are still angry about government, you know, remaining adamant not to open the internet or to switch on the internet again.
Yes, Isaac, and just to mention, we've been reporting, you know, about this government cutting down the internet in English-speaking regions because they fear that activists and foreign agents are going to spread destructive propaganda.
And we got comments to that effect. Chief Bisong, being an Anglophone, he says, and an opinion traditional leader in Cameroon, he tweeted and said, "I've been blocked from internet access for weeks now." Esther Nkana says Cameroon cannot have first-class citizens with internet and then second-class who are left in the dark. But Brett Carter says Biya's government now threatens to shut down local media for reporting on Anglophone protests. Biya's government should stop the violence, he says.
Well, Cameroon's communication minister Issa Chiroma on his part tweeted that the internet shutdown in northwest and southwest is because foreign protest agitators sending violent messages. Will look at that.
Yeah, we'll keep monitoring the story as it develops. And you, if you have any comments, please don't hesitate to comment on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Africa on the move.
With her laptop, electronic gadgets, and mixed deck, DJ Rachel was wowing the crowds in Spain and the German capital Berlin only a few weeks ago. She's only just begun to leave her East African home of Kampala, Uganda, and move into the world. DJ Rachel has been doing this for more than 20 years, but still only one among the very few female DJs in her country, a situation she wants to change. Bram Prostumers caught up with her on her first European tour and sent us this report.
The song Bamulete in a remix made by DJ Rachel herself. 20 years ago when she started, the mix deck was the last thing on her mind.
I fell into this accidentally. One time was doing this gig with a mic at some club. I was very young, actually. I was from school. And, you know, the DJs there liked me and told me, why don't we teach you a few bits of, you know, how to do this? And that's how I started. One time I was playing and I saw my mom right there in the crowd. But she didn't get mad at me. She was mad at the club, you know, the management. I got a few groundings, of course.
With the help of her friends at the club, DJ Rachel started carving out her niche and developing her style.
Initially, when you're learning how to DJ, you know, you want to push yourself, see what you can do. Can you make people dance? Can you mix hip-hop maybe with dancehall or maybe house or something, you know? You keep wondering what to do next.
DJ Rachel's set is a wild mix of music from around the world. Of course, she has her distinct East African roots, but she'll just as easily play around with pop from Nigeria or some Brazilian samba. How does she work?
I'm very adventurous, and I like to have a crowd that's adventurous. Back home, I play for a wide crowd, you know. I have an expatriate community, I have the local community, I have schools, you know, I have, you know, corporate events. Sometimes I have maybe a wedding for a traditional, maybe Somalis or Ethiopians. So I keep collecting everywhere, even for the parties I play for. Sometimes they give me some music for free. They're like, yeah, you can have this. This sounds good. Of course, as you go along, you find that the world is not easy, you know, being a girl, you know, working, moving in the night and all that. It wasn't easy, yeah. You find a lot of hurdles, you know.
These obstacles and hindrances are keeping the number of female DJs to a minimum. But DJ Rachel is determined to change that.
I started an organization, maybe I wouldn't call it an organization, but it's for female DJs and producers. So it's called Femme Electronique. The project is now up and running. Quite a few number of girls who, you know, signed up for it. I think they should try to, you know, pursue it seriously. And yeah, I'll drive them to do that.
Relentless drive. It's how DJ Rachel earned a reputation at home. Now Europe has had a taste of her spinning and mixing skills. Next stop, the rest of the world. 20 years in the business, but she's just warming up.
I have the passion for the music. I have the passion for being a DJ as well. Production now, I want to keep doing. Yeah. I told my friends back home that I'll be DJing until I'm 75. And they're like, what? You're going to come in with a walking stick and say, yeah, and then just sit down and play the music.
A report by Bram Posthumous.
Focus Europe.
It's been 25 years since the Maastricht Treaty was signed. To mark the event, a youth festival was organized by the European Youth Forum to bring together Generation Maastricht and get them debating key topics on Europe's future, a future which has been continually called into question in recent years. Gabriel Borud went along to find out whether there is much hope now as back as in 1992.
The morose and sultry sounds of this rusty saxophone contradict the mood here in Maastricht on this day of commemoration. but they hit the complexity facing the European Union today right on the head. 2,000 young people who will make up and shape the European Union of tomorrow are here today. This is the YoFest, a 3-day informative celebration of Europe featuring hundreds of workshops, talks, and speeches and films and games, all revolving around the EU. There's a film playing in one of the cinemas here at the Maastricht event. Ezzie van der Ferre, a 19-year-old skateboarder from Maastricht, spent the last 2 years of his life putting this film together. He and his buds skated across most of Europe, from Barcelona to Poland and back, and filmed it to show how much they love not having borders.
Europe means to me that you can go everywhere without any boundaries. That's the beautiful thing about Europe. You can go everywhere.
If it were no longer like that, what would that do to your life?
It would feel like I was trapped in my own country, I think. Yeah, it would suck, man.
So the idea of this activity is that each person coming here...
Over at the Europe House, it feels like a trade fair with all the stands trying to inform about some aspect of Europe. At one of them, called the Idea of Europe, there is a map of the continent covered in colorful papier-mâché. Bryce asks passers-by to write their ideas and hopes for Europe on slips of paper folded like a house and put them on the map.
So the idea is that in this Europe without borders and with a lot of colors, that people, they reflect on what are the values of Europe that we appreciate and also wishes for the future.
Yes, I'm very worried.
This is Brando Bontefi, a member of the European Parliament, sizing up the challenges facing Europe at the moment. Bontefi is in charge of youth affairs in the EU's largest legislative body. He says not enough is being done to restore faith in the Europe of tomorrow.
It can be restored if people are involved from the grassroots by political organizations, by civil society and by the governments in expressing what they think should be done to change Europe.
Okay. And you need one?
Camilla, a 28-year-old from Italy who has been working for the Scouts Youth Organization, says she is optimistic about the pledges made by European politicians, but that deeds have to follow words.
I'm really happy that we have these words and these declarations, but now we want action, and we want concrete actions, meaning funding and possibility for civil society to have a say.
With Brexit last year, Trump now in the White House, and general elections looming in the Netherlands, France, and Germany later this year, we could see very soon the extent to which that will happen.
Gabriel Borud.
And Eunice, guess what? Today is Valentine's Day, which comes every 14th of February every year. And the theme colors always is red and black, sometimes punched with white. Anyway, we posted on a Facebook page a picture of people checking out cards and asked whether postcards are outdated, since some couples have opted to send romantic messages, if you will, to their partners via text messages, WhatsApp, or etc., instead of the traditional cards and flowers.
It would be nice to hear what people had to say about this.
I read what they said, and of course I was surprised, you know, happily surprised. They said, Johnson Shoka says, DW Africa, you are absolutely right. That's the reality on the ground. Cards are outdated. And he ended his short message saying, with DW Africa, bravo. I think she's talking about the picture of people checking out the cards. And then Biamgisha Crispas, this one perhaps is from Uganda. He says, that's quite obvious.
Well, it's interesting that cards are now being outdated. Come to think of it, how back then people used to write cards and you used to have flowers all over.
A bunch of them. Anyway, listen to this one and then, you know, it gets more interesting. Mm-hmm. His name is really Lass. He says, even if I would like to send the card to Africa, it's not ever going to reach its destination. Most people don't have addresses there. But happy Valentine's Day to my friends. Anyway, this just made my day. Back to you, Eunice.
Well, thanks, Isaac, for your comments. And want to wish everyone a happy Valentine's. Thank you for listening. Well, a quick reminder of our main stories is the UN Human Rights Office is citing reports that at least 100 people have been killed in clashes between soldiers in the DRC and a local militia in the last 4 days. That's all we had. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe.
Bye for now.